Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
It's time to talk college football. We are in the offseason, if there is an offseason. Joining us first, you got the first spot here, my friend.
T-Bot. Yes.
ESPN 104.5 off the bench down there with Jacob Hester. The Snaps podcast. Hebster. He's a Hebster. The Snaps podcast with Aaron Murray. You've become, you know, you're not just an LSU guy anymore. You're a college football guy at this point. Congrats.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess I hope so. I like college football a lot. So that was always kind of, I guess, some of the goal. Honestly, my goal is just for people to keep giving me money to talk into a microphone to the point that I can pay for my kids. And if that happens, we're all good. If that's talking LSU, if that's talking all of college football, if that's talking Star Wars, I don't give a damn what it is. Oh, wait. No cursing here, right? This is going to be for radio. Yeah, no, I don't care what it is. This is for podcast. Okay,
but, you know, perfect. I try to work clean, but
I will work clean. I'm not going to disrespect.
I've had Brandon Walker on here before, so you know how that goes.
Yeah, he's a little. No, I'm just kidding. But it's cool, man. Thank you, Brad. I love college football. Yeah. It is the sport that is nearest and dearest to my heart, and I think we are in the most fascinating age of college football than I ever could have fathomed. The true 2024 gene of college football. If we have reforged the sport from the ground up.
Yeah, we really have. I can't say that I'm more excited for this season than I am any other season, because I'm just excited for every season. But the new playoff and those things, they have my interest peaked in a different way, if that makes sense. Like,
oh, 1,000%.
I'm ready for the season. If we were just still doing the BCS, I would still be ready for the season. But there's something more to this year.
Well, you look at the 12-team playoff, and mm-hmm. then you look at the new Big Ten and the new SEC, and I'll just look at it from the SEC perspective. Now that it's 12 teams, you have a lot of teams that expect to be there. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much oxygen in the room, right?
Right.
And I think right now I kind of have Georgia and Texas in their own tier, a tier one. Maybe I'm being a little bit like friendly to Texas there, but I spent so long bashing Sarkisian, saying he wasn't the guy, that now after I got proven wrong last year, I'll give him, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. So I kind of got Georgia, Texas tier one. I have Alabama in a bit of a gray area tier where they are neither on Georgia, Texas level, but I think they are ahead of the next grouping. And then I have Ole Miss, LSU, Mizzou, Tennessee as kind of your other playoff hopefuls, maybe Oklahoma in that group as well. And the crazy part about that is, the SEC is going to get three spots for sure, maybe four. And so there's just not enough oxygen in the room. Like, all those fan bases expect to be there, and most of them are going to be very upset.
You kind of got into my first question there, which was how many SEC teams can realistically win the national title? Because I've sort of done it as there's playoff contenders and then there's title contenders.
Yeah.
Georgia, Texas, title contenders. Bama, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Missouri, playoff contenders. Of those other four, though, can either of them realistically be the national champion this year?
I don't think so. I would put Bama in the title contender category, okay, though. I mean, if Kalen DeBoer is going to do what he did at Washington, and now you give him that roster. And again, the Jalen Milroe discourse is so odd to me, in that we feel like we know what this guy is, but like, wasn't he a sophomore last year starting for the first time? Mm-hmm. And like, look at how much better he got during the year. Look at how dynamic of a playmaker he became by the end. Now give him Kalen DeBoer, who has proven time and time again an ability to really unlock quarterbacks. It's like, yeah. And plus, you have an Alabama team that's, I think, going to be built kind of through the offensive line and running the ball a bit. I don't know, man. I think I hate it. I freaking hate it. Trust me. But like, I think we're maybe going a bit too far the opposite direction with Bama is just going to like fall off a cliff. Like, right. Why do we think Texas is just flat out going to be better than Alabama?
I mean, you're not wrong. They're definitely, the talent is definitely there, but I just feel like people are just going to be cautious with a new coach there.
Yeah.
What Saban was, which I get.
No, yeah. I get it. I get it as well. I'm just saying, it's just, again, you are giving, Kalen DeBoer, just a better ingredients than he has ever had to work with before. Yeah. And he was already elevating the ingredients that he had almost beyond what we've seen out of any other coach. So we'll see. I hope he sucks. Kalen DeBoer, somebody asked me to do like a Star Wars to SEC characters thing. And Kalen DeBoer to me is like Luke Skywalker, but if he takes Vader's hand, right?
Yes.
He is the dark side alternate reality Skywalker. He was the good guy. He was supposed to bring balance. And then he was offered the galaxy. And instead of saying no, he took the hand.
I like it. I like where anytime we can merge our two universes together, I'm for that. You mentioned Milroe, Jackson Dart, Brady Cook. How do you rank those guys?
I would have Milroe last right now out of that group. Again, though, Milroe is a potential play. It was his first year starting, whatnot last year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Jackson Dart 1, Brady Cook 2, Milroe 3, because we've seen it now a couple years out of Dart. Brady Cook was on the edge of being benched before he got awesome last year. And I love him. He's going to have Luther Burden and Theo Weiss in there. He still has Theo Weiss, right? Either way, I think Brady Cook's going to be awesome. But I do think Dart is like potential Heisman good this season. Like if they have an offensive line, which I know they've worked very hard to try to accrue from the transfer portal and whatnot. If they have a good offensive line, then I think Jackson Dart has Heisman potential.
Let's go a little closer to home for you with LSU. We had a question in a mailbag a few weeks ago where they talked about Brian Kelly, and they said, you know, should LSU fans be concerned that he's 20-7 after, you know, he's lost 7 games in his first 2 years? And I turned it around. I was like, shouldn't they be happy that he's won 20 games in his first 2 years? 20-7 is his record. What's the number that LSU fans should be focused on?
I mean, 10's the magic number. As long as you're winning 10 games a year, you're kind of within striking distance. You're close enough to where fans aren't going to be upset. It seems like a 9-3 regular season is kind of the lowest acceptable, not going to cause any major waves kind of bar. And then if you go 9-3 though, you kind of need to win that bowl game and get to 10. If you go 10-2, you make the playoff. Right. Yeah. So there is this kind of invisible hump there, this almost barrier of entry that it's so hard to go from 9-3 to 10-2. And we talk about you and think about you so much different. Like there's certain times in life where a numerical difference, where not all numerical differences are created equally. Right. Even though they can be equal, where it's like, OK, 2 + 2 = 4, right? Okay, you only increased by 2, but you doubled what you had. Right. You know, 98 + 2 = 100. Same thing technically, but it feels different.
The most math we've ever had on this podcast, Bob. Be careful.
And in that same way, it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but going from 9-3 to 10-2 is not only functionally way greater, and that's the difference between making the playoff and not, but it's just really, really, really hard to do. That said, I think Brian Kelly's been kind of an unqualified success these first couple of seasons. I mean, you say 20-7. Well, the only reason why you have one of those losses is because you won the SEC West and have an extra game to get to the SEC Championship. You've beaten Alabama at home. You've gone 10 wins in season after taking over a really bad situation. And on the academic front, you've actually put your money where your mouth is with this whole graduate champions thing and the process that you promised to instill. People may not realize this, but LSU is the lowest 4-year running graduate success rate in the SEC. It's those academic scores that came out the other day, right? You probably saw them. LSU was below the threshold, the minimum threshold, but punishments were suspended because of COVID. Now the first year of Brian Kelly has gotten added in. And not only was it a record number for that year alone, but it has dragged the 4-year running average up above they're still last, but they're above the minimum. So what I'm saying is, though, in reading about all this, what I realized is, as much as I agree with Cardell Jones, I didn't come here to play school. A healthy academic rating is the sign of a healthy organization. Like who leads the SEC? Alabama does. With like a damn near perfect score, right? And you look at the other schools in LSU's campus that have won national championships recently, they all have really good scores. So this is just to say that, like, I believe that Brian Kelly's process is working, is taking root. But I do not think that they are a national championship title contender this year.
So then what
are I don't know. And I don't know that LSU should ever, you know, if we're just being honest with the history, LSU has these awesome moments where they achieve these perfect storms of good, and they end up, they've won more natties than nearly anyone in the modern age. But I just don't think it's in the makeup to maybe display the consistency of an Alabama or a Georgia. If you just look at the entire history of the school. So, yeah, with that said, if you're going to tell me that you're going to go 10 wins every season, like, yeah, I think LSU fans should be happy with that for quite some time.
So what are they this year then?
I think 9-3. I know it's a cop out, but I kind of think 9-3. They have a friendly schedule.
Yeah, no Georgia, no Texas.
Certainly not having, and like where games fall, where they're played at, I like for them this year. Even Bama, having like
all at home.
Even having like 10 Power 5 games, because they've got USC and UCLA, but
two Big Ten games.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of SEC Big Ten classic matchups. But like, you're kind of catching those teams right when you want to be catching them. Yeah. I'm a little worried about De'Anton Lynn. I think he could do some things at UCLA, but it's still early. And Lincoln Riley and USC feels like they're in a and look, you go 9-3 each of the last 2 years. If you had managed to beat Florida State, well, then, you know, you're borderline playoff team. And so maybe that game going from Florida State to USC actually pushes LSU to 10-2. It's just, again, this is such a competitive SEC that I kind of got. And LSU as a roster has a lot of potential, but outside of offensive line, every single position group has question marks or is a question mark.
This is a Mississippi State podcast, so let's talk about the Bulldogs just a little bit. What do you think of Jeff Lebby here at Mississippi State?
I think State is cool. I think State is swag, and I think we all know that.
I've been saying it for years, T-Bob. Rivers and I have been trying to tell you.
I love, and I actually do love Mississippi State. Y'all should have gotten to host the NCAA tournament. That was some bullshit. But I love the honesty with which Jeff Lebby is approaching the situation, where in that opening press conference, he was just like, look, we're going to score a lot of points, you know, we'll see what happens on the wins and losses front, but I can guarantee you it ain't going to be boring. It ain't going to be the just head scratching, infuriatingly obtuse style of football that you were served up last season. Like it's going to be dynamic and fast paced and fun, if nothing else. And I think that's a very solid foundation upon which to build. I think when you were at a school like Mississippi State that is going to be asked to compete with the Georgias and the Texases, you have to adapt a bit of a different schematic style, right? And the most mind-numbing thing that Zach Arnett did was try to run a traditional pro-style offense in that setting. Pro style offenses work if you have the dogs. It's a very talent dependent offense. You want to run it at Georgia? That's fine. You can. You have five stars everywhere and you'll dominate everyone. Like a pro style offense is your most consistent style of offense, but it's also most talent dependent. When you get into things like, it's why Mike Leach was such a great hire at Mississippi State, things like the air raid or the spread, whatever you want to say, like these are systems in which, yeah, you're going to expose yourself to additional risk, but you also increase your own dynamism and you decrease your talent dependency. It allows you to punch up. And so when you have a guy like Jeff Lebby and his offensive scheme, I think that allows you to punch up maybe above your weight class in time and maximize your talent instead of kind of minimizing it like Zach Arnett did.
So Lebby's first year at Ole Miss with Kiffin, they were, you know, it was the COVID year, but they still won five games playing an all SEC schedule.
Yeah.
Terrible defensively, but really good offensively. Heupel's first year at Tennessee, kind of the same. They went 7-5.
Yeah.
Can State have a year like that? Are they still a little bit behind the curve talent wise to get there?
I mean, look, I don't know that I can comment accurately on the entire state of State's roster. Mm-hmm. I haven't done my kind of roster, you know, preseason deep dives yet. But again, on paper, yes, because I see the same schematic kind of advantages that we were just referencing in that year one at Ole Miss and in Tennessee. Like, that's how those schools started to accrue the wins that then kind of kickstarts the recruiting engine, and you show what style you're going to play, and you attract better skill positions and better quarterbacks and whatnot. Like, yeah, I think that is the path. And I mean, okay, I'm looking at the schedule now. Eastern Kentucky win. Arizona State should absolutely be a win, and Mississippi State's had success playing those Arizona schools in the row. Toledo win, Florida. I think Mississippi State's far better than Florida, even though Graham Mertz is good. Mm-hmm. Now, Texas and Georgia, that's brutal, right? A&M, that's going to be tough. Arkansas, I think State should win. Tennessee be tough. Yeah, Mizzou, tough. Ole Miss, tough. So that's a tough schedule.
Yeah,
that is a tough F schedule. I think if you go 6-6 with that schedule, that's a really good base for Levy to build upon.
That's you and I are on the same page then. So that's what I figured.
I mean, getting Georgia and Texas
on the road
both on the road is really, really brutal. But then the additional brutality here comes in the fact that like Tennessee's suddenly good, and that's on the road. And Ole Miss is suddenly good, and that's on the road. I mean, that's four top 10, top 15 teams that you're having to play on the road.
The six programs we mentioned as playoff contenders, State plays five of them. They don't play Alabama. That's the only one.
That's unfortunate. But I guess that's the new age SEC. Some years it's going to work out, and some years you're just going to be looking like, what the hell did I get myself into?
That's what it's going to be. T-Bob Hebert, ESPN 104.5, Snaps Podcast. Definitely listen to the Snaps Podcast if you're a college football fan. He and Aaron Murray are fantastic on there, man. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Have you watched Acolyte yet?
Have not sat down to watch it yet. That's on the to-do list.
I watched the first episode. I still got to watch the second. I thought it was pretty good. You know, it was pretty good. It was fine. I don't think I was blown away by anything, really.
All right, so Andor is clearly our number one, right?
In terms of the TV shows, I think Mandalorian season 2 is one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Especially how they ended it. Season 3 was all right.
Yeah.
I still really don't understand why though they put Mando and Grogu back together. I mean, I get it from a real world perspective, but not from a story perspective.
Correct.
Kind of cut the nuts out of the end of season 2 in a lot of weird ways, but no, Mando season 2, because season 1 was awesome, and then season 2 was this great continuation, that climax, and one of the coolest final episodes I've ever seen.
Yes.
But probably right behind that, Andor's amazing.
Okay.
Andor is the best.
So where are we putting, just off of one episode, what do you think of the Acolyte?
Yeah, Acolyte just kind of falls into the Boba Fett hopper of like, pretty good, okay, you know.
Did you like Obi-Wan?
I would put that in that same hopper, except Obi-Wan had some higher highs, though.
Yeah.
It adds that is fair. That is fair. Obi-Wan, I would go Mando season 2, Andor, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, big gap, then kind of your Boba Fett's. And even though I would even put Ahsoka ahead of Obi-Wan by a bit. But yeah, then get into your Boba Fett and Acolyte. Look, Acolyte, and this is not a bad thing. Acolyte feels a bit like a Kung Fu Kid show, which is cool. Andor is the only thing that they've ever made that kind of felt like adult Star Wars.
A Kung Fu Kid show with lightsabers has my attention.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's not bad. Like it is fun. It is absolutely fun.
I'll check it out.
And it's nice to kind of be freed of the original trilogy timeline and whatnot and be in a different time where you can kind of play around and color outside the lines a bit.
I like it. T-Bob Hebert, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Brian, take it easy, brother.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.